Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and moved, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Jason Staples, talking Miami-Florida State rivalry today. One of the premier rivalries in college football resumes once again in the wake of Hurricane Matthew. Florida State goes down to Miami to take on the Hurricanes. Lots at stake, obviously, every year in this game for Florida State. Perhaps even more at stake than normal. This is the first time that in quite a long time, I think actually since 2010, that Florida State has been the underdog coming into this game. First time again since then that Florida State has come into this game as the lower ranked team. Florida State obviously coming off of a close last second loss, very painful loss to North Carolina, which put Florida State out of the playoff discussion. North Carolina being a team basically on the same level as this Miami team, so obviously tells you that Florida State is more than capable of losing this game. A lot of fans and a lot of those around, a lot of beat media and so on are thinking at this point that Miami may be the better team and should be favored in this game. I'm just going to tell you right up front, I am not one of those people. And there's a reason for that. Main thing is that Miami has not played the schedule that Florida State has played to this point. You have to remember that at this point, Miami has played Florida A&M, 170-3, Florida Atlantic, 38-10, at Appalachian State, not a bad team, and at Georgia Tech, who is decent, but again, not a really good football team. And quite frankly, if Florida State had played this opening schedule that Miami has played so far, Florida State would be undefeated as well. Florida State would be 4-0. And I can tell you right now, that's one of the interesting things. That's the two-edged sword of playing a really difficult schedule is you get fans that want to play a tough schedule. I mean, you have, you know, a few years ago in particular, you had a lot of fans crowing about how they wanted to play in the SEC and, you know, you get game in, game out, every week matters, all this other stuff. But the double-edged sword of that is that sometimes you lose those games, even if you have a good football team. And that's the thing. I think Florida State has actually gone from maybe a little overrated to underrated in the span of 2 to 3 weeks, maybe even a week. And now I think a lot of people are looking at a team like Miami that is 4-0, coming off of a nice win against Georgia Tech, but a win that was basically dictated by turnovers, by forcing some key turnovers, getting a few really fortunate bounces on some fumbles, and returning two for scores. They beat Georgia Tech by 14 points and had basically 21 points off of turnovers that were easy scores, including back-to-back fumble returns for touchdowns. That was not a runaway game against Georgia Tech. Now, they were the better team against Georgia Tech, averaged 7.72 yards per play against Georgia Tech versus Georgia Tech's just under 5 yards per play. That's very good on both sides of the ball, and that's what you expect to win a game when you have that yards per play disparity. However, again, if Florida State had played that opening schedule, I'm 90%+ certain that Florida State would also be 4-0. They've yet to play a top quality offense. Appalachian State can't throw the football. Georgia Tech can't throw the football at all, either team. And you know they've not played a balanced offense, let alone a really quality offense. So this is going to be an interesting test for Miami, the first time that they've seen a quality offense. So I do think actually that Miami may be a better team overall so far this season than North Carolina has been, more consistent, and I think they're certainly the more balanced team. They're much better on defense than UNC, particularly up front. I don't think they're nearly as good at the cornerback position. I think Carolina's secondary is a little better than Miami's, actually probably a good bit better than Miami's. But they're not nearly as good on offense as North Carolina either. Obviously, this is a good offensive team. Brad Kaya, another NFL prospect at quarterback that Florida State will have faced. I mean, it has been a murderer's row of quarterbacks that Florida State's faced so far. Chad Kelly, NFL prospect. Lamar Jackson, enough said. Mitch Trubisky, I think a better NFL prospect than Chad Kelly or Brad Kaya. And now, when Quentin Flowers is the worst quarterback that you've played out of your first four, FBS games, that you've played a pretty good series of quarterbacks, and now Brad Kaya is now going to be the third best quarterback that Florida State will have. I'm sorry, the fourth best quarterback that Florida State has faced so far this year, which is just wild. But they're still not nearly as good on offense as that UNC team. I think they're better on defense, not nearly as good on offense. Maybe overall a little bit better team, right around the same level, but a more balanced team, which frankly I think winds up being a better matchup for Florida State. I said this before the North Carolina game. I tweeted this out. Again, if you want to follow me on Twitter, that's at Doc Staples on Twitter. I tweeted this out before the North Carolina game that Florida State has a real chance of losing this game against North Carolina, but they've got a much better chance of losing against North Carolina than against Miami next week. And they did, of course, lose to North Carolina, and now they're playing that Miami team, and people are coming in thinking that they're maybe more likely to lose the Miami game than they had been the North Carolina game, which I think is exactly the opposite. But anyway, let's go ahead and take a look at the matchups a little bit here. We'll start with the Miami defense versus the Florida State offense. And first things first is this Miami defense is more of a return to traditional Miami-style defense, as opposed to what they were running under Al Golden and Mark D'Onofrio on the defensive side of the ball, where they were a little bit more of a passive team, a little bit more bend, don't break, trying to not put themselves in positions where if they were overmatched by talent that they would be giving up major plays. This is very different. This is going back to the aggressive, attacking kinds of defenses that we're all used to seeing from Miami in the 80s and 90s, and led by defensive coordinator Manny Diaz, who has ties, obviously, to Miami, with his father being the former mayor of Miami, and also to Florida State, as he's a Florida State graduate who GA'd at Florida State and, you know, obviously has a lot of ties. He cut his teeth in terms of defensive football under Mickey Andrews, and that's the kind of defense that we're going to be seeing from Miami. They're going to go one gap up front with their defensive line. Each guy's going to be responsible for one gap, and they're going to turn that defensive line loose and try to cause havoc in the backfield. They're going to press with their corners on the outside. They're going to try to bring some pressure. They're going to bring pressure from all over the place. And they're even willing to go unsound and give up some plays downfield if they can get pressure in exchange. They're going to try to create turnovers. They're going to try to create havoc, create confusion for a young quarterback, and stop the run first, and basically force Florida State to beat one-on-one coverage downfield. That's what they're going to do. And so far this year, they've been really successful with that. They've got some good pieces. This is probably the best set of pieces that they've had on the defensive line since Jimbo Fisher's been head coach at Florida State. This is the best group of talent up there on the defensive line that they've had, and they're I think in the top five in the country in Bill Connolly's havoc rate statistic, which has to do with how much havoc you're creating, how many pressures you're getting, tackles for loss, sacks, all of these other things, calculated into one number to try to show how much chaos basically you are creating with your defense. And I think they're up right at the top there in that statistic so far. And, you know, and that's against some decent rushing offenses, at least so far this year, particularly with App State and Georgia Tech. They've caused a lot of problems with that. And that's something that Diaz does really well as a defensive coordinator. They're going to move their fronts around. They're going to bring pressure. They're going to bring those linebackers. They're going to try to come downhill and force you to ultimately do different things than what you're comfortable with is what Diaz tries to do. I mean, his philosophy, and this goes back to Mickey Andrews and lots of coordinators, but his philosophy is he always wants to make you try to beat him left-handed. He wants to take away the one thing you do best, So against Florida State, you can bet that they're coming downhill against that outside zone, against the stretch play, against the outside zone stuff. They're going to be reacting really heavily to that and having those linebackers come straight downhill on that to try to limit what Dalvin Cook can do in the running game. They're going to try to stuff that, and they're going to commit a lot of resources to that. And if they give up 400 yards passing and lose, as long as they're not letting Dalvin Cook beat them, well, Manny Diaz, I think, is going to tip his cap. That's the way that they're going to approach this in this game. Now, they've been able to do that so far and still have the number four, according to S&P Plus, number four pass defense in the country so far. But I think that is a little bit deceiving. I mean, even though that's opponent adjusted, this is where I think even opponent adjusted scores sometimes run into trouble. I think that's a little deceiving because of the type of offenses they've faced. So Georgia Tech has been able to throw the football some on some of their schedule, but they weren't against Miami. And I think that's, again, part of the reason for that is that Georgia Tech couldn't run it really on Miami all that well. And if Georgia Tech can't run it, then they can't throw it when they're not throwing off a play action and so on. And similarly with App State couldn't throw it against Tennessee or Miami, and their quarterback really can't throw it against anybody. And they haven't faced a wide receiver that you have to be concerned about at all so far this year. They've not played an offense that can challenge them downfield in the slightest. So I think their past defensive stats have been a little bit deceiving so far. That's going to be, I think, where a lot of this game is decided, is whether or not they can continue to come downhill, put eight in the box and seven in the box against more spread stuff, and try to force Florida State to throw the football. Can Florida State challenge those defensive backs downfield who are, you know, they don't have the quality of defensive backs even that Florida State's putting out there without Derwin James. They don't have those guys that I think can really match up and take away Florida State's receivers, even the Smurf crew, the Smurf squad. I don't think they can take those guys away just one-on-one, and that's where I think Florida State has some advantage here, is that, again, I think if you watch Miami's corners, if you watch their defensive backs, there should be some guys open against that one-on-one coverage. You're just going to have to execute. You're going to have guys win those matchups. Now, this, by the way, is a week where I think it's an important week for Auden Tate because of his size against one-on-one coverage. I think even Keith Gavin, who we saw in the first half, in particular against North Carolina, we saw him some already against North Carolina. I think we probably are going to see him even more here against Miami. Those bigger receivers should be a little more important in this one as they try to play press man and that sort of thing, particularly in the red zone. You get those bigger receivers against those smallish Miami corners, guys like Corn Elder. He's just not big enough to handle an Auden Tate one-on-one, and they're going to ask him to do that sort of thing, and that's where I think you can get some advantages in the passing game, and I expect to see some of that from Florida State this week. The other major issue that I expect Miami to have in this is that they start freshman linebackers. Yes, just freshman linebackers. Get Dalvin in space against those guys. So in the passing game, find ways to get him in space against those guys, against those linebackers. Find ways to get the tight ends isolated on those linebackers. They're very athletic, but they're young and they do take false steps. They do make freshman mistakes here and there, and that's where you can get some big plays against Miami if you've got the quality to do it. And this is where I think actually the development of Maven Saunders, which we saw, you know, him have a breakout game against North Carolina last week, gives Florida State the ability to go more too tight, and that's really, really helpful in this game because you want to keep those linebackers on the field and you want to force them to have to do multiple things. You want to have to force that. You want to force them to have to come downhill against that outside zone and still cover those tight ends down the field, down the seams, and these sorts of things. And you want to put a lot of stress on those linebackers, and I think that's something that we're going to see a lot of in this game is Jimbo Fisher basically putting that 12 package personnel, so one back, two tight ends, on the field a lot more, just like he did against North Carolina, to put stress on those linebackers, give some versatility in the running game, give nice angles on the edge, while making sure that Francois can get some nice, some play action stuff to those tight ends against those linebackers down the field. That's another thing that I expect to see a lot of. And frankly, this is ultimately where Jimbo Fisher wants to go with his offense as he continues to recruit to his vision here. You know, I think long term, what he'd really like to see is more the ability to run more 12 personnel with versatile tight ends who can both, you know, with length, who can both block on the edge and put stress on linebackers and create matchup problems down the field with a pair of big wide receivers outside them. That's really what Fisher would like to do. A lot of 12 personnel with two big wide receivers outside them and a quality back. That puts a lot of stress on the middle of the field with those taller tight ends, with the big wide receivers down the field. Also gives you some difficulties if you're a defense trying to single cover those big receivers. And then you're able to run, you know, with that quality back down the field a lot more because of his ability to or because of your ability as well to block on the edge and to block down the field with those bigger receivers. And again, FSU doesn't really have all of that with their experienced talent right now, but you can see that even going into next year offensively, that's where I think the base next year is going to be much more your two tight ends, your two tight ends, Saunders and Izzo, with Tate as one of the starting wide receivers, probably Rudolph as the other, and then rotating in George Campbell and Gavin and Keith Gavin as two others there. You're going to see a lot of that type of thing with one back in the backfield, giving FSU some versatility in balance in terms of what Fisher wants to do offensively. That's the vision, and I think we're going to start to see more and more of that as we get further into this year as well. I do think, though, that running DeAndre Francois is also really important in this game because of how Miami's defensive line has been able to play so aggressively and how they've been able to blitz those linebackers and to try to shoot those gaps with linebackers in the running game. It'll slow Miami's defensive line and keep the linebackers honest a little bit more if they've got that third thing to worry about with the quarterback's legs. So not only do they have to worry about the running game, but the play and the play action to the tight ends in particular, but also the quarterback's legs. I think that's, again, something you've got to do a little bit in this game to get Miami off balance, particularly early. And you know, FSU's run Francois in games so far this year, but they have waited more until the second half each week to do more of that. I think that's something that they should do a little bit more early in games, and we'll see if they transition to doing that a little bit more in this one. So let's go ahead and shift gears then and switch sides of the football, and we look at the Florida State defense against the Miami offense. And of course, this is the place where a lot of Florida State fans start cringing because of discussing Florida State's embattled, at this point, there's really not another way to put it, defense against yet another NFL quarterback prospect, which we already mentioned on this earlier on the show. Brad Kaya is a quality quarterback, a quality NFL prospect, a guy who can make every throw. He doesn't have as strong of an arm as a Chad Kelly or a Mitch Trubisky, but he can still make every throw, can still threaten downfield. He sees the field well, and Mark Richt offense, just like a Jimbo Fisher offense, is going to be quarterback-friendly, going to give him some options on play action, give him throws that he's comfortable with. And that makes things difficult. That said, Miami's offense is still not as good an offense as Louisville, Ole Miss, or UNC. And they don't put Florida State's defense in nearly as much of a bind as those offenses did in some of the places where FSU is weaker. So that should be a little bit of a comfort. And actually, if we look at opponent adjusted rankings so far, Miami's offense is just ahead of USF so far on the season. And I think that's fair. That's fair. Although I think Miami is, again, better than the USF offense, mainly because they're more balanced. USF, much more damage on the ground with Daylon Mack and Flowers, their legs as the main threat. And then beyond that, you've just got to worry about the long ball threat with them. Whereas with Miami, you're getting some balance. You're getting the ability to run the football a lot. And that's what they're going to do. I mean, this is a Mark Richt offense, and it is looking like a classic vintage Mark Richt offense, where more Georgia era Mark Richt offense, where they're running the football, running it with success. I mean, you look down the list, Mark Walton has got the majority of the carries so far, averaging 7.06 yards per carry. Yerby averaging 7.3 yards per carry. Gus Edwards, only 13 carries on the year, but still getting his carries as well as the big back option, 9.7 yards per carry. These guys are getting their carries, and they've been successful so far. And that's what they're going to do. They're going to come in, and they're going to try to establish the run so that they can get Brad Kaya some options down the field on play action. And in a lot of respects, this is going to be a matchup where both offenses are trying to do to the defenses the same things. You have a lot of similar problems on each side of the ball, similar strengths on each side of the ball, and you're gonna see Miami try to do to Florida State what Florida State's gonna be trying to do to Miami. So, you know, Miami's gonna run 44 a bunch. They're gonna run that off tackle running play a bunch, and then they're gonna play action off of that. Now, the concern to me has to be if you're Charles Kelly in this game. If you're Jimbo Fisher in this game and you're trying to game plan against Miami, you have to commit to stopping the run first. To me, Miami does not have... They've got Stacy Coley, who is their one really big threat in the passing game at wide receiver, and freshman Amon Richards had a nice game against App State as well. But they don't have a Mac Hollins or a Ryan Switzer, or, you know, even Ole Miss's wide receiver group, that you have to be terrified of multiple guys at wide receiver downfield as much. To me, you can try to stop the run a little bit more in this game early to try to dictate a little bit more to the offense that they're going to have to throw the football and let your corners press, let your defensive line eat a little bit. I think you've got to get pressure on Kaya. So you can't mush rush in this game. You can't tell the defensive linemen to slow down a little bit and make sure they keep their leverage. I think you've got to let the defensive line loose in this game. Let them come downhill. Let them stop the run first on the way to the quarterback and just dictate to the offense that they're going to have to throw a bunch to beat this Florida State defense and keep it simple the way that they have the last couple weeks, playing some man and man match. Some zone match type stuff in the secondary to get the matchups that they want, letting those corners try to press and get those receivers in a little bit more uncomfortable scenario. Now, Miami, on the flip side, they're going to be trying to use that threat of the running game to get some of their better matchups downfield. And to me, what they're going to do is they're going to get David Njoku and Christopher Herndon, their tight ends, who had some success, and Kaya really likes throwing over the middle of the field to those guys. They're going to try to get those guys matched up against Florida State's linebackers and safeties, their interior coverage players, and use those guys for some big plays up the field. That's got to be your concern if you're Florida State. That's where the big plays are likely to come from, aside from the running backs in the backfield. So you have to key on the running backs. And at the same time, you have to worry about those tight ends. To me, that means you've got to let those corners handle the receivers a little bit more, single coverage, and just tell them this has got to be a week where they win those matchups. The other issue here is, what does Florida State do at the star this week? Last year, Miami had a lot of success putting Stacy Coley in the slot and basically abusing Florida State at that star position, where, frankly, FSU has just not had a player that has been real good at that spot since Jalen Ramsey was there in 2014. The 2015 defense was really good, but it was still a little bit vulnerable at that star position. Well, they're still vulnerable at the star position now, and without Derwin James in the secondary, they don't have the ability to compensate for that as much as they've had in the past. And to me, it's going to be interesting to see what FSU does at that star position. Are they going to move Trey Marshall up in there? Like, that's where Marshall started against Miami last year, had success against Miami until he got ejected. And then Miami picked on that position, Tyler Hunter and the rest of the game. Do they, you know, would Florida State consider putting Marquez White in the slot? Are they still going to go with Marcus Lewis, who's had trouble getting lined up there in the slot? What are they going to do in that star position against Miami? Because again, if I'm Miami, I go back to what the prior coaching staff did last year, and I see that they got Stacy Coley in that spot. They got him matched up against some of those guys, and they caused some problems for Florida State downfield. So to me, again, Miami's not going to get as much out of their outside receivers, and they probably know this. So the tight ends and the slot position are really where Florida State has to make sure that they play sound, and that's been an issue so far all year. Now, again, like I said, it's going to be interesting to see what FSU does at that spot to try to shore that up. Now, when it all comes down to it, I do think this Miami offense is a better matchup for this defense to play against without Derwin James than the other offenses Florida State has played so far. They don't have the depth of talent out wide to challenge Florida State as much and to cause as many busts and so on downfield as what we've seen so far. I think that's a good thing for Florida State. I think this week should have the full attention of this defense after, you know, again, getting embarrassed one more time last week. I think ultimately, both sides of the football, Florida State matches up fairly well with this Miami team. I do think there's going to be points scored. I think for Florida State, the magic number, they're going to have to score over 35 for sure. I think that's the magic number. Ultimately, I do have Florida State winning this game. I'm more comfortable with that pick this week than I was with the North Carolina game, where I thought it was maybe a 45% chance that North Carolina would win that game, and they ended up winning. And you got to put, I wonder what the odds of him actually hitting, of Nick Weiler actually hitting a 54-yard field goal in that context actually is, but it's probably somewhere around 45%. But in any case, I feel more comfortable with Florida State as closer to a 70% win probability in this game, maybe even a little higher than that, 70-75%. I have Florida State winning this game 41-34. I think there's going to be a good number of points scored. I think both teams are going to struggle a little bit to stop the run. I think Miami will probably stop the run a little better than Florida State will, but ultimately FSU is going to get a little bit more in the passing game from their running backs and from the tight ends. It's going to be an interesting game schematically to watch. I know that this is always a fun game to watch rivalry side, but I do have Florida State winning it 41-34. So in any case, that'll do it for us today. Now, before I get out of here, just a reminder, you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. You can also follow Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. Make sure to catch our next podcast, which is also going to cover the Miami game. It'll be obviously the post game for the Miami game. And if you've been enjoying these podcasts, I know I've heard from a number of you on social media that you've just picked up on this podcast recently. If you're enjoying the podcast, definitely leave reviews. 5-star reviews on iTunes help a bunch. They help bring more people into the audience. Share these episodes and share past episodes as well, particularly ones where we look at problems and solutions and that sort of thing where people would be interested. Share those things on social media with your Seminole friends on social media. Your glowing and effusive reviews are very appreciated. Once again, I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a vSporto channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.